Good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 1st March 2022, Tuesday class. So we'll be continuing from this book, the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutta, Miao Fa Liang Hua Jing. We are at page 225 of the hard copy. Okay, just relax body and mind and maintain some power. Awareness, then we will have our half an hour of awareness based meditation. You're off the light, then you all can straight away move on to develop the awareness based meditation. So I will set the alarm for 30 minutes. Always remember the four support: relax body and mind, completely relax. Feel yourself at ease. No need to do anything. Don't try to know. Don't try to do. Just silent. The second support is relax and maintain silent. After you have relaxed, you feel very free, very at ease. But the relaxation part is not easy, especially the body. You have to learn to relax yourself. Then your mind, you have to learn to relax. After you are skillful, then you can do it because you become like more sensitive. You can sense whichever part of your body not relaxed. Then whatever mind state that is disturbing you or creating worry and anxiety, all these are the sign of non-relaxed state of mind and body. So normally when you are not relaxed, there is either tension or tightness somewhere, or there is problem with you, stress, something disturbing you or haunting you. That's why you cannot be in a state of relax and you cannot be peaceful. You cannot enter the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. So when this happens, means the mental hindrances are there. You have most likely is restlessness of mind, or sleepiness, or doubt, or lack of faith. Then of course your daily life, you don't have a proper daily mindfulness to stabilize your daily life, then in the midst of life, you are in the state of disorder most of the time. Is you arise a lot of first and second mental hindrance of sensual desire and ill will. Means every moment of sense experience, you stir your mind, you react to what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. All these are the habitual activity that you do. And every time you do it, you create mental hindrance. Either you like or you create dislike, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience. So when this become very frequent, it develops into habits, and we call it habitual tendency. You will have that tendency to do it very often. And as we know, mental hindrance are mind state that hinders our mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. That's why daily mindfulness is very important. Ability to stabilize your mind, to develop the awareness within, is also very important. This will help you when it comes to meditation. Okay, so now remember, relax, maintain awareness. Whatever arises, they arise. Don't resist, don't fight, don't try to do anything. Then after that, try to develop the ability to be aware within for as long as you can. The third support is technically 24 hours, awareness. Then finally, the fourth support is, of course, trust your nature to do the meditation. Just allow that nature to move. Do not interfere with the thought process, the thinking. When your thought does not come in to interfere, means you are doing the fourth support. That one maybe later for most people who have not developed the stability of mindfulness or awareness within. So trust is a later cultivation. When you have stabilized your inner awareness, then when you have developed some form of progress, then you can let the nature move and do the meditation on its own. Just allow that silence within to activate and move whatever he wants to do. We are at the second paragraph. Bearing what others cannot bear. What is it that people cannot bear? Temper. If you bully a person a little bit, he will get angry. You can bear others' anger, perhaps by pretending that they are singing your song or speaking a foreign language is as if nothing happened. So bearing, enduring, yielding, and renouncing are all primary prerequisites of those bodhisattvas who cultivate the great conduct. So this is the number fifth quality here. Then we move on to the number six quality of a Mahasattva. Number six quality is Mahasattva pass through great aeons. Means they cultivate, they come for the living beings for a very long period of time. Their cultivation can take easily a few aeons, depending on the individual. Aeon is kappa in Sanskrit. How great are the great kappas that they pass through? I will tell you. One kappa is 139,600 years. So this is roughly the length, the equivalent time. 1,000 kappa is a small kappa. So this is the extent of the time frame that the cultivator take. Then 20 small kappa is a meter kappa. Then 4 meter kappa make a great kappa. That's why they call it the Maha Kappa. The 4 middle kappa, they are actually very long period of time. So normally one world system, they break into 4 stages of 4 great kappas, middle kappas, sorry. So this middle kappa, they are very long period. Every form makes a great kappa or maha kappa. Okay, then we read on. How many great kappa does the bodhisattva pass through? 3 great unaccountable aeons. The bodhisattva travels 3 great asankhya kappas. Asankhya kappa is a Sanskrit word which means uncountable. Think it over. What does it add up to? 3 great asankhya kappas. How long would you say this was? So it is not easy to be a bodhisattva. It takes a long, long time. You must pass through many, many kappas to be a bodhisattva, Mahasattva. Then the seventh quality is Mahasattva 6th degree result is the great vehicle to be Sammasambuddha. What is the great result? The great result of becoming a Sammasambuddha, Anuttara Samyasambuhi, that is of supreme, equal and proper enlightenment. The result of the realization of Sammasambuddhahood. A bodhisattva who has all these seven qualities is therefore called a Mahasattva, a great being. How many Mahasattva were present at the speaking of this Lotus Sutta? There were 84,000 of them, all of whom had entered the path towards certification to the supreme, equal and proper enlightenment. Once on the path, they only make further progress. So these are the seven qualities of a great being, Mahasattva. Okay, then we go on to the next part of the sutta. All irreversibly established in Anuttara Samyasambuhi, all had attained Dharani and the eloquence of delight in speech, and turned the irreversible will of Dhamma. They had made offerings to limitless hundreds of thousands of Buddhas. In the presence of those Buddha, they had planted the roots of virtue. They were constantly receiving those Buddha's praise. They cultivate themselves in compassion and were well able to enter the wisdom of the Buddha. They have penetrated the great wisdom and arrived at the other shore. Their reputation extended throughout limitless world system or world rhyme, and they were able to cross over countless hundreds of thousands of beings. Then we go to the commentaries. The Bodhisattva Mahasattva all were irreversibly established in Anuttara Samyasambuhi. There are three kinds of irreversibility. First is the irreversibility of position. As great vehicle bodhisattva, they would never retreat the position of the two vehicles. Then number two is the irreversibility of thought. Bodhisattva are ever mindful in the practice of the bodhisattva way, in the practice of the six perfections and the 10,000 conducts. In every thought, they think only of going forward. They never retreat. It would never occur to them, I am not going to practice the bodhisattva way anymore. I will go back to the two vehicles and be an independent arahant instead. It would never happen because they are irreversible. So the first two vehicles are the sainthood way and the Paccheka Buddhas. You remember? The sainthood way are just the four stages of sainthood accumulating into arahantship. Then the Paccheka Buddha are also sainthood way, except they don't need to listen to the Four Noble Truths. They are not sound hearer. They are conditioned enlightened one. They awaken to the way through contemplating the 12 link Paticchasamuppada. Sometimes the sasana is there, then they contemplate, they reflect, they realize. Sometimes the sasana is not there, on their own they can also become arahant. So these are the Paccheka Buddha. Sometimes they call them the silent Buddha. But silent doesn't mean they cannot teach. They can teach, but they don't have a sasana. That's why they are called Paccheka Buddha. Okay, I will read on. The third irreversibility is the irreversibility of practice. They only go forward and do not retreat. Thus, there are three kinds of irreversibility. Irreversibility of position, the thought, and the practice. All had attained Dharani and the eloquence of delight in speech. Dharani is a Sanskrit word interpreted as meaning uniting and maintaining or suppressing and holding. Unite means that they unite all dhammas. Hold means they hold limitless principles. The Dhamma spoken by the Buddha contains an unlimited number of principles. And the irreversible Bodhisattva had all obtained Dharani, the uniting of all Dhammas and the holdings of all principles. Dharani also means spell or mantra. It means suppressing and holding because Dharani gives rise to goodness and eradicates evil. They suppress evil and uphold the good. They suppress evil and cause good deeds to be practiced. It also carries the meaning of doing no evil and practicing all good acts, which is the meaning of the term morality. However, there is a slight difference in that the moral precept must be upheld by you. With the Dharani, you recite a mantra that helps you to severe evil and cultivate goodness. The power of the mantra aids you. There are many kinds of dharanis. The sutra text states, all had attained dharani and the eloquence of delight in speech. This could also be interpreted as to mean that they all had attained the dharani of the eloquence of delight in speech. So these are the great beings' qualities. And they turn the irreversible Dhamma wheel. The Bodhisattva turned the Dhamma wheel to teach and transform living beings. What is meant by turning the Dhamma wheel? There is a common phrase, the Dhamma wheel turn forever, or forever turn. The eternal turning of the Dhamma wheel refers to the irreversible Dhamma wheel. What is meant by turning the Dhamma wheel? For example, here we lecture on the sutta and speak the Dhamma. We are also translating the sutra into English and introducing the Buddha Dhamma to all people. And this too is turning the Dhamma wheel. There are not just one, but many different types of work involved in propagating the Buddha Dhamma, all of which are considered to be the turning of the Dhamma wheel to teach living beings. Therefore, as disciples of the Buddha, we must take the work of turning the Dhamma wheel as our own work, as our duty and responsibility. We should do whatever work we can do to turn the wheel of the Buddha Dhamma. For example, now in the scientific age, we have a mimeograph machine, and every day we put out typescript copies of English translation of the previous night's lecture, so that everyone can have a copy. This is called turning the Dhamma wheel too. Turning the Dhamma wheel is the circulation of the Buddha Dhamma so that it can flow like water and never stop. When I was young, I also did the work of propagating the Buddha Dhamma. At first, before I was able to lecture on the sutta, I printed sutras. Whenever someone was printing a sutta, I would contribute enough money for the printing of a few hundred or a few thousand copies. Then I will give them to my friends and relatives. Perhaps at New Year or some other holiday or on their birthday, I will make them a present of a copy of the Buddhist Sutra. The Chinese like red packet, so I wrap them in red packet or paper so that they make beautiful gifts. I would say I am giving you the most important gift. That is why? Because it can save your life, the life of your wisdom and your Dhamma body. Because you are my friend, I am giving you that which I like most, the Buddha Dhamma. I spoke to them very sincerely and earnestly, and they could not but greet them. Once they read them, they would become interested in Buddha Dhamma and come to me saying, "Where did you get those sutras? I have some friend who would like to give copies too. Can you give me a few more?" Then I was in the business of distributing books. No matter who was printing sutra, I would subscribe. While I was in Manchuria, my wealth consisted of nothing but Buddhist sutra. I had more sutra in my room in Manchuria than there are in this entire lecture hall, a whole lot. Wherever I go, I had a lot of sutra. Then there is another part in the teaching, which I think I also like to share. It's mentioned the only way we can repay our parents is actually to teach them the Buddha Dharma. They even mention even if we were to carry them when they are very old, you still cannot repay what they have sacrificed for you or their kindness and all those things. So that sutta shows the importance of the Buddha Dharma. In Hong Kong, this one is regarding Master Xianhua. I spend the most money on sutra too. I probably printed more than $1 million Hong Kong worth of sutra. When I was about to come to America, I gave away over several $100,000 worth of Buddhist sutra. I will give each person a big packet of them as gift. I had planned to give them away gradually, but because I was going to America, I hurry up and give them away because I had no place to store them. The thing I like to do most was printing sutra. Now that you are making copies of the lectures, this is also a very good way to spread the Dhamma. It pleases me a great deal. This is how I turn the irreversible Dhamma wheel. I hope that all of you will exert yourself vigorously in this regard. So it seems Master Xianhua has very strong faith in printing sutra, the gift of truth. They have made offering to limitless hundreds of thousands of Buddhas. Not only did they turn the irreversible Dhamma wheel, they also make offering to all the Buddhas, limitless number of them, an uncountable number. How many? They offer to hundreds of thousands of Sammasambuddhas. So that is the extent of a great being, a cultivator. They not only met so many Sammasambuddha, but they make offerings to them too. Then the next part of the sutra is, in the presence of those Buddha, they have planted the roots of a myriad virtues. This great bodhisattva throughout limitless kapas and in the presence of limitless Buddhas have sent down and nourished the roots of virtues nature, all the virtuous nature. How did they plant them? How did they nurture them? By making offering to the Triple Gem and turning the irreversible Dhamma wheel. You can make offering to the Triple Gem. You are nourishing and nourishing the roots of your virtuous nature. So this one is very useful, very important understanding. So this making offering to the Triple Gem, they are a field of great merits. Then when you do that, you are nourishing the roots of your virtuous nature, means our nature, the perfection of all the 10 perfection, all the virtue. Then not only that, when it comes to cultivation, this virtuous nature is like what I used to share with you. We have a karmic nature, we have a spiritual nature. So karmic nature, you know, you will accumulate everything that you do, good and bad karma also. But spiritual nature is the cultivation and the perfection of all the spiritual practices, the spiritual virtuous cultivation, all of the spiritual understanding, perfection, you cultivate them. And that spiritual nature, when it develops into perfection, it becomes the virtuous nature. That's why the spiritual nature is very virtuous in the sense that it has great wisdom. Perfection of wisdom leads to perfection of virtue. So they are related, interrelated. So when you have walked the path of this way to be a bodhisattva, accumulating to be great beings, mahasattva, you will understand all this. Then you will develop them. Okay, we move on. They were constantly receiving those Buddha's praise. The 80,000, oh sorry, it's mentioned 80,000, not 84,000. Mahasattvas were constantly at all times receiving the praise and commendation of all the Buddha, who said to them, "Good man, you are truly fine, good man. You practice the Bodhisattva way and you are not bad at all." The Buddha all praises the Bodhisattvas. They cultivate themselves in compassion. They had always used a compassionate mind to teach and transform living beings. And they cultivate compassion in their own person. Then the next part of the sutra is, and they were well able to enter the wisdom of the Buddha. They were quite capable of attaining the Buddha's wisdom, means perfectional wisdom. They have penetrated the great wisdom and arrived at the other shore. They have penetrated the greatest wisdom there is, that is the understanding, like the Sammasambuddha. Great wisdom is the Buddha's wisdom. The Buddha wisdom is the great wisdom. Having attained the great wisdom of the Buddha, they were then able to arrive at the other shore. The other shore here refers to the Sanskrit word paramitas. Their reputation extends throughout limitless world rhyme or world system. The 80,000 Bodhisattva Mahasattva names have been heard in all limitless world by all living beings who are constantly aware of them. And finally, the last part of the sutta is, and they were able to rescue countless hundreds of thousands of beings. They could save and transform hundreds of thousands of tens of thousands, countless number of sentient beings. So this is the sutra part. Then we go on to the next part of the sutra. So next part of the Lotus Sutra is their names were here they started naming. Bodhisattva Manjushri, the Bodhisattva who contemplated the world of sound, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, then the Bodhisattva Great Shrine, then the Bodhisattva Forever Vigorous, then the Bodhisattva Unresting, the Bodhisattva Jiopam, the Bodhisattva Medicine King, Yao Sifo, then the Bodhisattva Courageous Giving, the Bodhisattva Jiu Moon, the Bodhisattva Moonlight, the Bodhisattva Full Moon, the Bodhisattva of Great Power, the Bodhisattva of Unlimited Power, the Bodhisattva Transcending the Three Realms, the Bodhisattva Bhadrapala, the Bodhisattva Maitreya, and the Bodhisattva Accumulation of Jewel, the Bodhisattva Guiding Master, and other Bodhisattvas such as this, 80,000 in all. So this is the starting of the introduction of all these 80,000 Mahasattva, or great beings. Let me go to the commentaries. What were the name of the 80,000 Mahasattva? Since there were 80,000 of them, if we were to list every name, the Lotus Sutra would be too long. So only a few who are leaders have been listed to represent the rest. Their names were Bodhisattva Manjushri, Wensu Fusa. Manjushri is a Sanskrit word. It's interpreted as wonderful virtue or wonderful auspicious. Of the Bodhisattva, Manjushri has the greatest wisdom, and so he is known as the greatly wise Bodhisattva Manjushri. Among the Bodhisattva, he holds highest rank, and so he is listed first before the Buddha who contemplates the sound of the world. There are four great Bodhisattvas: Bodhisattva Manjushri, Bodhisattva Kuan Yin, or who contemplates the sound of the world, or in Sanskrit is Avalokiteshvara, Chinese is in Mandarin is Kuan Yin, Kuan Sing. The Bodhisattva Universal Worthy One, Nisai Pusien Pusa, Samantrabhadra, or Pusien Pusa. Then the last one is Earth Store Bodhisattva, Tichang Wang Pusa, Kistigaba, Tichang Wang Pusa. Bodhisattva Manjushri developed in China on Wutai, the five peak, Wutai San, five peak mountain, where his way place is located. His efficacious response are marvelous beyond all reckoning. He realized Buddhahood long ago and was called Buddha of the lineage of Honored Dragon King. After realizing Buddhahood, he hid away the great and manifest the small in order to practice the Bodhisattva way, teach and transform living beings, and help the Buddha propagate the Dhamma. His spiritual penetration and miraculous function are inconceivable. In China, the great contemporary late Master Xu Yun, the most venerable Xu Yun Lama San, make a vow to bow once every three steps on the way to Mount Wutai to pay reverence to Bodhisattva Manjushri. He bowed from Putosan, which is an island in the South China Sea, 1,000 miles to Mount Wutai in Shanxi province. Every time he took three steps, he made one full prostration to the ground. Then he rose, took three steps, and bowed again. He was bowing to Bodhisattva Manjushri. seeking a response so that he might open his wisdom and become greatly wise, just like that Bodhisattva. The distance was approximately 1,000 miles, and one bow every 3 steps. How long would you say it took him? A long time. Do you want to know the details? See the pictorial biography of Master Xu Yin's year-to-year autobiography. When the Venerable Xu Yin had reached the Yellow River, it was winter and snowing. He took refuge from the storm in an old vendor store hut beside the Yellow River. The snow fell unceasingly, and the Venerable Xu Yin was right in the verge of dying from the cold and hunger. Just then an old beggar came by. He melted some ice in a pan and made some yellow rice gruel and gave it to the elder master. When the elder master had eaten it, he felt revived and asked the beggar his name. "My name is Wen," the beggar said. "And what is your other name?" the master asked. "I am called Wen Qi," the beggar replied. And he asked the master, "Where are you from?" "I have come from Mount Puto, Puto San in the south," master replied. Wen Qi pointed to the snow and said, "Do you have this in South China Sea?" The master replied, "No." "Then what do people drink here or there?" "Water." By that time, the snow had melted into water. The beggar pointed at it and asked, "Then what is this?" The master was speechless. The two of them decided to journey together to Mount Wutai. The beggar didn't bow. He carried the master's bag. Without the heavy bag to carry, his bowing and walking was much easier. Before, it took great effort to bow and rise. Now he was able to bow faster. When Master Xu Yin was bowing, the master asked Wen Qi, "Where are you from?" He said, "I came from Mount Wutai," said the beggar. "And all the monks there know him. They are all my good friends. They continue their journey sometimes. They stay in monastery along the way. And the monk will gang up on the beggar and scold the master. If you are making a pilgrimage, make one. If you are bowing, you should just bow. Why have you got an attendant? What kind of show are you putting on?" They jeered. Everywhere they went, the two of them were harassed. Sometimes people won't even allow the beggar to stay in the temple, but would immediately throw them out. He underwent a great deal of harsh treatment. Although the beggars had been able to endure a lot of abuse, when the two of them had nearly reached Mount Wutai, it appeared that he finally decided he had suffered enough at the hands of the monks, and he told the master, "Up ahead, someone will help you, will come to help you, but I am going to leave now." As he took his leave and departed, the master went on ahead, and sure enough, he soon met an official from Hunan with a horse cart. The official put the master back on the horse cart, and the master continued to bow once every 3 steps. When they arrived at Mount Wutai, the master asked if they knew a beggar named Wen Qi, but no one, not a single monk in Mount Wutai, knew of such a beggar. Later, someone asked the master, "What was the beggar's name?" "Wen Qi." The master replied, "Oh, this Manjushri Bodhisattva. Wen stands for Wen Su, the Chinese translation of Manju, and Qi stands for auspicious. One of the meaning of Shri in Manjushri, the beggar was the Bodhisattva, wonderfully auspicious Manjushri. So the Venerable Xu Yun had bound all the way to Mount Wutai seeking a magical response from Manjushri Bodhisattva, and he moved the Bodhisattva to come and carry his backpack for him. Master Xu Yun made the tremendous difficult journey over 1,000 miles to pay respect to Manjushri Bodhisattva. And Manjushri was walking right along with him forever, such a long time. But Master Xu Yun didn't recognize him. When later he realized it was Manjushri Bodhisattva, he was nowhere to be seen. So the wonderful occurrence of Manjushri Bodhisattva was indeed inconceivable. Because the Bodhisattva is wonderful, he transformed himself into a beggar. He could have transformed himself into a wealthy elder with a horse cart and carriage to help the master. But indeed, he went with the master on foot and shared his hardship. There were many such incidents of his magical deeds, but we wouldn't go into them now. So before I continue, I think I will share a bit. You see, when it comes to cultivation, we have to bear in mind. The great beings, they come in all form. You don't expect they come in very beautiful attire, as shown in the whatever photo or statue that you see in the temple, or even nowadays on the books or magazine and all the same. So as cultivator, we must bear in mind, we must have this ability to sense and to understand. So when people who are very simple, very old, or sometimes they come in the form of beggar, they could be one of the great beings. You never know. It's a manifestation. Even during the Buddha's time, I think there were many Jataka stories where King Sakka came down and disguised as an old couple with a wife trying to make offering to Kassapa Buddha. Then as Kayamita, I also make 2 trips to Wutai San. Puto San, maybe 3. That's why we have affinity with all the 4 great holy mountains of China. We went to not only Puto San, Wutai San, we also went to the way place of Puxian, which is what is the place? Er Mei San. Then the one, a store Bodhisattva one. Dizhang Wang Pusa. That one is, what is the name right there? The way place. Jiuhua San. So these 4 holy mountains we already covered. Some I covered more than 2 times. Some 3 times. And there is another one, Huang San, also very beautiful scenery, but it's not a holy mountain, but it is a very nice place. The nature all very beautiful, and it's quite near to this one of these mountains, I think. Because one of the trip, we make it to Huang San first, before we move on. What I want to share with you is when it comes to cultivation, even this life in 1986, I told you all when Kuan Yin came with a message. The one I saw in the dream was an old lady in white. And you didn't even know that she is Kuan Yin until she held my hand. Open up my palm. Then he took out the vase, which is the trademark of Kuan Yin and pour that three gem, the triple gem on my hand in a straight line. At that moment when I saw the bus, I knew it was Kuan Yin. That's why the message is very simple. You have to move fast. Not much time left. That was 1986. That's why immediately after that, I woke up. And I straight away pay respect in very strong emotion of joy, great. I say, well, I knew it was Kuan Yin and thank Kuan Yin profusely for the message. And from that moment onward, I go all out to cultivate non-stop for 3 years, 86 to 89. And strangely, very funny, immediately after that, the book come, the teacher come, the guide come, everything that I need, they arrive, they come. And within that 3 years, I receive the Dhamma. I receive the understanding. And I met up with many teachers and guides. And I receive a lot of sutras, books, and all those things. That's how things can happen. And the one I saw is an old lady, very, very old, very old. The scenario at that time, in that very vivid time of dream, was very unique, very special. And you know, it's always before you wake up and the message will come. So a lot of this thing as cultivator, you may not understand until it happened. So this is the part I want you all to develop understanding so that you will not miss out on these great beings when they appear to you, or when they appear to help you or to deliver certain important instruction and messages. When Manjushri Bodhisattva was born, 10 kinds of extraordinary events occur, which shows that his merits and virtue was perfect and his wisdom was the foremost. The 10 auspicious signs that manifest at Manjushri's birth were: number 1, the room was filled with bright light. On the day that Manjushri Bodhisattva was born, his house was filled with a light that was unlike that of the sun, moon, star, or lamp. This light represents the Bodhisattva's light of Prajna, wisdom. It indicated that this Bodhisattva has great wisdom, which could dispel all darkness. And the second auspicious sign is the vessel filled with sweet dew. Sweet dew is an elixir of immortality found in the heavens. You drink it, it will give you, it will make you full. You can go without eating and not feeling hungry. We ordinary people get hungry if we skip a meal, because we have not obtained the nourishment of sweet dew. Sweet dew can make you full, and it can make you feel pure and refreshed. If hungry ghosts are anointed on the crown with sweet dew, their offense, karma, is immediately eradicated and they can go off to rebirth. The vessel will fill with sweet dew. Manjushri Bodhisattva used the sweet dew Dhamma to rescue all living beings. When the gate of sweet dew is opened, all the hungry ghosts come and get their fill. Then the third auspicious sign is the seven treasure well formed from the earth. The seven treasure are gold, silver, lapis, lazuli, crystal, mother of bowl, red bowl, and carnelian. They are considered treasure because of their rarity. In this world, whatever is rare is regarded as a treasure. Things that are abundantly found are not treasure. Soil, for example, is basically very precious, but people cannot survive without it. However, no one cherishes it. If you try to give people a handful of soil, they wouldn't want it. If you say, this is the most precious thing, and I will give it to you, they take a look and see that it's soil, and they throw it on the ground. Why? Well, soil is found everywhere. Basically, the earth is very valuable, but no one regards it as such because it is all over the place. Thus, it is not a treasure. Water is also a very precious resource, without which we couldn't live. Not only people, but all living creatures depend on water for survival. Lao Tzu said, the highest good is like water. Water well benefits the myriad things and does not contend. It flows to places that people find unpleasant. Thus, it is closest to the way. So this is a very good description. Water brings benefit to all things and beings, yet doesn't claim any credit. It doesn't say to plants, it's all because of me, water, that you are able to grow so large and have such gorgeous blooms. Without me, how could you? How could your bloom look so pretty? You really ought to thank me. Water does not think that way. It dwells in places that people despise. Water dwells in the lowest place where no one else likes to live. Metal, wood, water, earth, and air are all beneficial to people. Why didn't people conserve these things? It is because there is so much. Since wood is everywhere, people don't cherish it. Why do people cherish gold? It is because it is so scarce. Its scarcity is what makes it valuable. It is not found just anywhere. If you were to go to the land of ultimate bliss, where the ground is made of gold, you would find that soil is valuable there because there isn't any. If you were to present someone there with a handful of soil, they would cherish it. The way we might have cherished a piece of stone retrieved from the moon. It's just a rock, but because it came from the moon, it is priceless. When a worthless bit of soil from the Sahara is taken to a land of ultimate bliss, it is regarded as a rare treasure. The seven treasures are treasures because they are rare and not easily seen or obtained. So Manjushri Bodhisattva has a limitless storehouse of treasure. At the time of his birth, the seven treasures welled forth from the earth. There was an inexhaustible supply of them that could never be used up. Where are they? You may ask. They are at the place of Manjushri birth. Can I go there? You should not be greedy. If you are thinking of going there to take some of the treasure, perhaps the cost of getting there will exceed the worth of the treasure. So quit having such false thought. The fourth auspicious sign is the god opened the treasures. The wheel turning sage king has seven treasures, a different list than the one given above, one of which is the guardians of the treasure, that is, God who watch over their treasure. The treasure mentioned here were buried in the ground by people long ago and forgotten. So the God opened them and revealed the treasure so people could take them. The fifth auspicious sign is chicken gave birth to phoenix. I think we just skip it. Then number six, pigs give birth to dragon. Number seven, horses give birth to unicorn. Number eight, cow give birth to white tiger. What is it? White tiger is an extremely rare animal of white color. It's neither like an ox, nor like a horse, nor like a donkey, nor like a mule. It's not like anything at all. It looks like a horse, but it has all the... How to pronounce this? Hoofs. Hoof of an ox. It's a special category all of its own. It's also an auspicious animal. Number nine, the grain in the granaries turn to gold. And number 10, elephant with six tusks appear. So this one I think we can skip, because this may be in the sutta, but I just want to skip it because it may not have much Dhamma meaning in it, apart from the unique or species sign. But don't worry, don't go and arise the thought whether this is the truth or not. How can this be true? Forget about it, please. Don't go and do that, because we may not understand. Then I just read after the number 10. These 10 auspicious signs occur at the time of the Bodhisattva's birth and represent the 10 perfections of the greatly wise Bodhisattva Manjushri, which makes him different from other Bodhisattvas. If you want to meet Manjushri Bodhisattva, you should first remember this 10 auspicious signs. Then when you see Manjushri, you can say, Elder One, you are an old friend of mine, the teacher who understands me the best. Why do you say that? He will ask. Why? I know the 10 auspicious signs that occur at the time of your birth. When you recite them for him, he will be delighted and say, yes, you are my old friend. He wouldn't deny it because you really know him. If you don't know him, don't know them, then although Manjushri Bodhisattva is not prejudiced, since you don't recognize what he's all about, he wouldn't draw near you. The greater you recognize, the greater your recognition of him, the closer he will be to you. The reason we want to know the rhyme of every Bodhisattva is because we want to be every Bodhisattva's friend. Every Bodhisattva is our good and wise advisor. Each one of you will be good and wise advisor of Bodhisattva one day. So you shouldn't look lightly upon yourself. Okay, we stop here. After that is the Kuan Yin, the Bodhisattva who contemplates the world of sound. Okay, we stop here. So we will now open up for meditation reporting.
I share this meditation experience on Sunday, the day before Monday yesterday. As usual, it's in the early morning time, after wake up from sleep.
Yeah, yes.
That morning was quite unusual because I don't feel to go to toilet.
Very good.
I after wake up from sleep, I just continue aware of the breathing, aware of the heartbeat. And then slowly I felt that that as though the body is like just something lay down there, just like not so heavy and not so light. Like that.
I understand.
Lay down there. So I felt the body is like that. And then after that, I feel that the four limbs, or the hands and the legs, having these flows of sensation, or just something flowing inside,
The
whole body, whole body, and the
activity
and the
whole, there.
Like, like in a flux, but it's not shaky. It's very soothing, very smooth.
Correct. Because your mindfulness and awareness, you can feel them.
So, and then next thing that I wear is warmness at the bottom of my body. That means the contact point with the bed, the warmth there. So these are all being aware, and I don't know how long, and then I just keep watching it, it. And then later the I felt the it's already morning, the lights are already in. I just come out from the meditation. I go to the toilet. I just leave it like that. I didn't contemplate immediately after that. So only on Monday morning. After wake up from sleep also, so I start to contemplate. I didn't meditate, I just recall back. What is this? So I just quiet myself, and then I just lie down, relax, and then this like this understanding or what, I'm not sure. It came out like, so it just tell me like, oh, this is what Brother Teo told us, the Achan Yantra. Achan Yantra telling us, body is body.
Yes, the body. Mind is mind.
Body is never the body. Body is never the
never
mind.
Never the mind. Mind never the body. Yes.
So I felt, the body is just lay there.
It's just element.
To do, like,
just element.
Just element.
Supported by all the conditions within.
And then the awareness within is, looking at it, watching it. So it's just two separate things.
Completely separate. And you will know one. Oh, very good. You can go through the inquiry. It's very good. Yeah, that one
then,
is
one more thing, brother, before you give me further guidance. Then the like you say, the elements thing come out, lor. So
you
say the flowing is the like liquidity combined. And then the body lay there is just like a earth or what element. It's
earth
not
element,
the same like it's not the same like we all purposely use the thought.
No. It's the awareness that is aware. Very good.
It's not to feel the hardness, softness.
Just
felt the weight.
Yeah. Correct.
Just a lump weight there.
Just a piece of kaya.
Just a piece of thing there. So the elements thing come out a lot. Even in one of the sutta, I think I can't remember, but they said instead of four great elements, there are six of it. The fifth and sixth is consciousness and the space.
Space, I'm not sure of it yet.
But on Sunday morning was the consciousness feeling the thing is moving inside, all those I felt there's about five elements that I so-called aware of it.
Sadhu.
That's it, right there.
I'll explain a bit. Thank you, Sadhu, for the good sharing. You see, when you really have the ability to be mindful, to be aware, then we can actually meditate in a very different way, because later on you can also try it, contemplate. But I used to do this long time ago. After I had developed the understanding, the awareness and all those things, then every time I meditate, I also had that understanding that this form and mind is not what people think. That's why human being can never fathom what this form and mind is all about, because their egoic mind, their thought process is so strong, their grasping aggregate is so strong, they cannot actually realize the true mind, the silent mind, the awareness that is aware. When the awareness that is aware, then you realize without the movement of consciousness and the thought process, the body is just a body. And that one goes the way of nature. But it will condition your conscious mind to have certain activity and movement. There are sometimes like it make it restless, want to think. And sometimes it may also like certain part itchy or whatever, or certain sensation trigger off. Then it create thinking, thought process and all that. But when we are a cultivator, like what you have gone through, when you are in that tranquil state of stillness or just pure awareness nature, then the form is like you mentioned, is, you know, is, I call it like a lump of thing. You call it the body, like that one piece down there. It's actually that physical form, that kaya, K-A-Y-A, not the one we eat on the kaya. This one is the Pali word, kaya. So that kaya, you don't go and conceptualize it into what the teaching or the Dhamma book tell you, the four elements. Forget about it. The true awareness that is aware, that thing is that thing. Without thought, without consciousness, who are you? What are you? Then I realize, without that thought, the egoic mind, the conditioning, the views, the opinion, and the memory, all the same, then that one is completely not what you think. That's why your contemplative understanding of what you realize, like what I used to share, what my teacher used to tell me, body is just a body, mind is mind, the mind is never the body, body never the mind. It's easier said than done. To realize that is very important. Body is just a body, the mundane mind is the mundane mind. Then there is another element, our life force, that trigger of the heartbeat, the pulse of life that circulate all this, that sends the blood around to nourish it. That's why I came to know all this, is because when I meditate, I silent, I saw all this activity and movement. Then I realized without the thought coming in, the body is just a body. Then the consciousness is content with the thought process, when you input the content of consciousness, all this thing, and the views, opinion, the memory, all this thing, then it starts to arise. Then this combination of the form and mind is what triggers a living being, or what we call the five aggregate of form and mind. The first aspect is as a human being. So this one will interact and become like a phenomena that it arises, like exists, like real. Yeah. But the best way is to inquire through the silent mind, to meditate. When you try to understand exactly who are you, what are you, you learn the most. That's why the next stage you can move on to is after you have seen all this, then next time when you are just aware, you silent everything, the inquiry is, who are you? What are you? Then let the awareness develop the understanding, that it will show it to you. What is this form and mind all about? What can it do? You see how the consciousness move, how it animate and how it do all those things, then the best way is assume you are dead. When you are dead, means the mind cannot arise any mental intention to do anything. Means you like a dead corpse, but you are still alive. Your life force is still there, your awareness is still there, witnessing all these things. Yeah. Then you will come to understand later on, yeah, a very important aspect of the form and mind. When the consciousness is trapped inside this physical body, it's actually limited. It like trapped inside. There's a craving force that binds it to the form. And because of that, this consciousness cannot free itself, cannot come out. That's why you need to relax, maintain awareness. Then later on, when you do that, when you are able to relax until it's so relaxed, until the craving force or like starts to dissipate. Yeah. And it can actually, the whole thing can go on. Yeah. But I did it that time was because I was too tired. Then I saw the craving force that bind my consciousness to the form completely dissipated. That's why the consciousness came up. Yeah. But even if you are not tired, you can reach a stage where this awareness and the craving force is gone. Then there is a layer of what we call the feeling body. The feeling body. The feeling body is very strange. Huh? That one, like an etheric, they call it an etheric body. That one can expand one. When it's not trapped with the craving force, trapped into the, when you are able to release or relax until that craving force become less strong, then I realize that the body or the feeling body can like expand on, can move on. Then it's like you can try to play or find out more and more. Then that time is, I remember very interesting, that was about 20, 30 years ago. Then later on, you were also silent until, like, how the thought come out, how the thinking manifests, how that, like, form and mind, that mind inside there, actually activate and move the body. Yeah. So a lot of this is not through the memory or the thought processing, is through your awareness that witness all this, observe all this, and see all this. Then the understanding become completely different. Then you are very clear. The body is just a body. Mind is mind. Consciousness is consciousness. Content of consciousness is another thing. Then how it actually condition each other. Dependent originating, condition arising, causal phenomena. All this, the twirling, you will see until it becomes clearer and clearer and clearer. It's no longer the theory. Like how upon contact, not only feeling arise, you will know apart from feeling, there are also other things. The content of consciousness also went in very fast. Then ignorant contact condition all the ignorant content of consciousness. Then without wisdom, without yoniso manasikara, the normal living being has got no power to deal with the defilement. You can see all this. You will understand all this. Then you realize the Dhamma is really so wonderful, so beautiful. The Buddha is really so wise. That's why when you can see all this, it's no longer a theory, no longer a concept, no longer a book knowledge that you read. It is through direct seeing, awakening. So that process is quite an interesting process of inquiry. And I like to do that because I just want to understand what happened if, let's say, a person died. Well, my consciousness come out before I know what death is, the separation of the consciousness from the form. Then how I went in and couldn't enter the body, then how I take control of the body later on. Then now, with this thing back trend, I want to know how actually it gain control of this physical body. How it like become like the entity that mundane mind or the egoic mind or the consciousness is content, take charge of this physical body. Yeah. So you can find out, you can silence it. And I did a lot during the early days when I was like what can be controlled early morning before I wake up. I was silent everything and I will do all this inquiry. Then I just silent. Then through that silence, I find out. And it's very interesting. A lot of things will come out from that inquiry, from that understanding. So, salute to you, Amy, for bringing up the condition for me to explain all this. There are very few people can go to that stage to do the inquiry. So, for your case, it's the beginning, but it's very good. So, as you start to go into this, you will become different again. That's why the awareness nature, you will stabilize it more and more, more and more. Then that one, like I used to share with you, you find out why I say it's not a being. It cannot come out and live life. That's how I found out that that nature inside is not a being. It's not an entity that can come out and live life. The moment it wants to come out and do anything, the creation must start, the mundane thinking, the angry of mind. And that one is already the mundane mind. It's no more than nature. That nature is just the awareness nature, the thing that is capable of the observation, the awareness, the way, before anything can go in. But these are connected. The five aggregate of form and mind and that nature are connected. That's why you need the vehicle and the tool. That's how I came to know. This one karmically conditioned, but we need this form and mind karmically conditioned, the vehicle and the tool, to come to this existential world in order for us to connect to that nature. But that nature without the form and mind can never manifest. It needs a form and mind. And you must meditate, silence everything, and connect. That is the only way to connect to that nature. And that nature, that's why all my understanding is because I inquire on my own and I went in and I understand all this. That's why I dare to teach and share, even though not in the book. And even monk also never talk about it or describe it. Yeah. All this is because when I went through the whole process, I came to understand. Then this nature, the gateway or this thing, unless you go through, you can never understand. Because that process after the gateway, which is the bodhisattva way, the cultivation, is a completely different set of cultivation. It's not only awareness based, is the further cultivation that leads to completely different understanding, where the perfection of all the perfections, paramita or virtue, inside, through that understanding, all this become possible. That's why it will link you to the five bohi stages of bohi mind development. You remember the bodhisattva way? I describe it in the blue book, the cultivating the bodhisattva way. Then when we went to Taiwan, when we were at this Fakusan, I saw that small booklet. That small booklet actually didn't describe much. But very strange, you know, that booklet, about the Bodhisattva cultivation. It is a simple, very simple one, small, thin booklet. But that booklet was there, and somehow I took it. Then I flicked through. Then I saw the five stages of Bodhi mind development. Very strange, you know. It's a, nothing was explained inside that book about the five Bodhi mind development. But there is a description of what these five Bodhi stages of Bodhi mind development. Just a description on it. So the first stage is the Bodhi mind that aspire to go this way. That one very easy to understand. That one many people can understand. Yeah. Then the second one is the Bodhi mind that actually severe, endure and severe affliction. Yeah. That one straight away understand because I went through the Bodhisattva way, the vow, all I understand. Then the third one, Bodhi mind that illuminate that nature clearly. That one, unless you are a Bodhisattva, you cultivate before, you can never understand. Because that time I already went into the nature through the gateway, then my nature actually illuminated that that nature inside. The Bodhi mind that illuminate that one. Very clear. That's how I understood what that thing is. Then after that, the fourth stage of Bodhi mind development, Bodhi mind that renounces samsara. Straight away I understand. Because by then, my nature also understands. Samsara is nothing. People can talk about it aeons and aeons, but it's nothing. Because you know, samsara is not what people think. It's the wheel of birth and death, cycle of birth and death. And that time frame is actually a delusion created by thought. That's why when you have this understanding of what that nature is, you will not have any of this wrong view or wrong thought. You were there to come for the living being for eternity. Because that time samsara is nothing. We are all these are conditioned arising causal phenomena. Manifestation, not what you think. But the vow will bring forth, the perfection will bring forth all this. Yeah. Then when you renounce the samsara, that is the time you will never regress. Even at the third stage of Bodhi mind development, you will never regress really. Then you will move on really. Then after you have this ability to understand the Bodhi mind that renounces samsara, that cultivation is a very different cultivation. That's why from there onward, your perfection become very different. That's why I understand that perfection by itself very fast. And I know how to develop all this. That's why after that, the fifth stage of Bodhi mind development is the accumulation of all this perfection leading to the Samma Sambuddhahood, means Anuttara Samya Sambuhi, means reach the consummation of Samma Sambuddhahood. So these five stages of Bodhi mind development, when you go through that nature type of cultivation, which we use the four support trust. Very few people can do, unless you have the condition and the understanding. Very few people can do, because that trust to go into that nature is beyond thought, beyond mind. You cannot use mind. That nature move. That whole thing is a different movement, completely different. And when you are able to go in and witness and understand all the things, then that nature's understanding become very clear. That's why I can tell you all that this one is not a being. It cannot come out and live like and all those things. This is the unconditioned. But this nature is very different. It is capable of a lot of understanding, manifestation and all. Because from there, it can make use of the vow, the cultivation, the perfection, everything. Then together with the spiritual nature that we develop, it will inherit. But this, what they call form and mind, because when we come as a bodhisattva, we already have the understanding, we know how to connect back to this one. Then when the wisdom that we develop through this penetrative cultivation and understanding, this whole thing that is developed, you no need to remember one. It's part of our nature, our spiritual nature. Then you will continue to inherit from that nature, the perfection. Yeah. Whatever you have done before from the past, or it will come back to you. That's why this life, I told you, a lot of things I never learned this life. But how come my nature can understand? Because I recall, I connect back, and I actually went in and realized the thing again. That all this understanding, when connected to the form and mind, the form and mind become very different. That's why I have been using this form and mind for the last 30 over years, since 1989 until now. 99, 209, 219, 33 years already. Yeah. And it's so beautiful, so beautiful. That's why all this teaching, all this understanding, unless Kayamita have condition, my nature cannot share. Yeah. So now you start to understand how all the teachings are connected and how this understanding come about. Why the sharing is so different. You cannot find, not even Buddha, right? You can't even find anybody who can even talk about this or describe this. Completely out. It's very rare, very rare. So hopefully, with this sharing, it can help those who are having the faith and the understanding to move on. So maybe, hopefully, it will help many of the Kayamita, including you. Salute to you for creating the condition.
Yeah, thank you, Sadhu Bharatiya. I have to listen again because
you have to listen again.
A lot of pointers,
a lot. Because of the condition. Unless there is somebody who is starting to do it or what, my nature cannot share, because no point. If I share, I tell you, cannot catch on. Nobody can understand on.
Good evening, Bratio.
Good evening.
And all Kalamitas.
Yeah, so I do.
Bratio, very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting, because I know you will be listening attentively.
I was thinking, Bratio, something very strange happened, you know. After you were giving the talk, you know, about Banjusri and all that, then you say, okay, go for toilet break and then come back. Then I don't know what made me suddenly think of Ajahn Yantra.
Sadhu.
And I went to Google him, you know.
Then
I saw, I mean, he's now quite elderly with a white beard.
Yeah, long hair in the States.
So I was thinking later when Ing Bee was talking about Ajahn Yantra, I was laughing to myself.
What a coincidence.
Okay, regarding what you just shared, Bratio.
Yeah.
It is something that as we walk the Bodhisattva way.
Yeah.
Which I feel that a lot of us, especially this particular group of about 10 people, I think they have put a lot of effort into cultivation.
Yeah. Also their faith.
The faith and understanding of what the Bodhisattva vows and way of cultivation is. And when we go through, like when you're talking about all the bodhisattvas together with the vow, it makes us how would I say have more faith.
Yeah.
That though it may seem rather impossible at the moment, if we just disregard all this, what the mundane mind says, and
forget about the thought, the mundane mind,
just do it,
Then persevere, then the faith will surface. As long as you are sincere, you persevere, then the faith will come, where the understanding will come. Then one day you realize, hey, actually not difficult. Then suddenly you may also realize, actually you have done it before. Oh, where the condition, when it sets in, a lot of things will happen. A lot of things will happen. Because the reason why I asked Amy to nominate you is where I know you are one of those who listen attentively, and that day, I think it's Jin Hao, he was with me here, Bia Sui was not back yet. So he told me, you are the one who told Jin Hao to nominate Alicia, where Alicia shared something with you. And that's why Alicia actually did the reporting. Then the condition arise and a lot of very good sharing took place. That's why I know, because of that, I asked Ingvi to nominate you. Sadhu, you continue, sorry.
Yeah, Varatio, I'm doing my utmost, whatever I can do at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And what Sister Ingvi says about the, especially in the early in the morning, to do the meditation.
Yes.
Actually, that helps a lot.
Yes, that one is the most conducive one. After you have rested, the first thing that arises aware. Then you start your meditation. That one is very beautiful. You need to go to a washroom, you go, then after that, lie down. I did that a lot in the early days. That's why I went through the whole process. Then I learned a lot of things on my own from my nature.
Yeah. There's a time when the body is still like a not really fully conscious.
You
feel there's so much vibration.
Yes.
In the body.
Yes.
And the mind is still very,
very fresh, because you just have a good rest, long rest. Then most of us are cultivator. We are aware while we are asleep. But the awareness may not be the one that is fully aware. You may be aware at the meditative gateway there, aware at that nature there. But you no need to like maintain awareness. Unless you want to like try out the 24-hour type of awareness meditation. That time I did it for a few months, I remember. And I knew 24-hour awareness is possible. Like, I didn't sleep at all throughout the day. Then the moment I wake up, my awareness and the thought process come up. Like, I didn't sleep. And my face, no need to wash face on. Like, not tired or anything. And very fresh. Then all of the movement during the sleeping moment, the subconscious release, unconscious release, that's how I saw all those things, I can understand all those things. Then how my awareness inside there maintained, then how it laps into the unconscious, the subconscious, then how the subconscious release, because my awareness inside there, the way. And how I hear my own snoring and all those things and all the movement, whatever. During that time, I did it. I did a lot of all those things. That's why through all the training, cultivation, my nature developed. And it become very different. And it transformed very fast. But at that time, that nature just moved. Then it go back to its past cultivation level very fast. I remember within 9 months or 12 months, everything come back. That's why after that, my nature understands a lot of things. Then my transformation of consciousness becomes so different. Then after the Monday mind collapse, I remember after 9 months. Then after that, my cultivation become very different again. That movement, the awareness, all different again. Like the nature shine forth. Then the gateway, it starts to go in deep, long. That a lot of things happen. So all this is what is possible if you are to do it. So like what you mentioned just now, if you start to do it in the early morning, you also come to know you are fresh. Then your body had just rested. And when you are doing the awareness base, the clarity is there. Otherwise, if after you went into your daily life already, so that mundane thinking come back. And most people cannot maintain the stability of daily mindfulness and awareness. Not until I realize your mundane mind collapse already, that stability is not easy to be aware throughout the day. But before the Monday mind collapse, I remember the 24-hour mindfulness that I did. At that time, the mindfulness can be continuous, but it's only for that period, I remember. That period. Then after that, not long, I know something is happening at the forehead there. Then after about 9 months, I remember, suddenly the thing dropped off, like a layer of consciousness. That's why I knew on the Monday mind, like a layer of consciousness, it just dropped off. Then I got no more Monday mind, like winning, no more Monday mind. Then my brain that time transformed, the whole thing transformed. The brain become like very different, that's why that brain, I also don't know how to describe to you. My brain like very different, it's functioning. Because not clouded already without the mundane mind, that brain has that clarity and that ability to understand things very differently. So all this, as you go through the cultivation, the practice, you will develop on your own, and the understanding will evolve more and more. So remember, early morning, there is a good one. So you give it a try. You had done before, like PG.
Yeah.
That's why I remember your report, the chipping of the bird. Oh, very clear one, early morning. Very clear. Then nature vibration. I like the rain. When it rained, that time I will meditate. There's a lot of vibration and all those things going on. Then that nature that receives the thing, the awareness through the senses, the pure awareness of it, very beautiful. You experience all those things. Which human being normally lost in thought, think a lot. They are not aware at all. That's why they will not have the ability to be in the state of awareness. To be in the state of tranquility, stillness, silence, and aware, and stay with that nature without any thought movement, they can hardly do it. But as a cultivator, we can. And we can actually go deep into it some more, and we can experience it, and maybe I use the word experiment with it. Some people use the word play with it. No, don't play. Experiment with it. Find out. Because I have an inquiry mind that want to understand, want to find out. And a lot of things you can investigate into and find out and experiment. Yeah, these are new fields which other people cannot understand or go through or touch. Okay, you better continue. 3 more minutes. PG.
Yeah. I like to do awareness training, especially early in the morning when I get up very early morning to go to the bathroom.
Oh,
and then when I come back and after I take some water, I will normally stand at the window and look out because it's quite far.
Yeah,
see the sea partly.
Yeah.
That's the time and I find that it's so silent that I can, the mundane mind is very much silent.
Yeah, yeah. Very,
the
very
awareness
quiet.
Will come up. Yes.
Yes.
The awareness is very strong.
The awareness will shine for.
Yes. The awareness will be very strong. And somehow it's like things are so different.
Yeah.
It's like you are with nature itself.
With nature, the oneness.
The oneness or whatever we can call it. Yeah. It's very much very, very different. That's
I
like to do it early in the morning.
Yeah, yeah. So do.
Or when there is a thunderstorm.
Yes.
You get totally, you can go totally into it.
Yeah.
I find that that's one of the best times to retrain the awareness.
The awareness. That's why I can feel the sign also. Sometimes up there got beings who wants to rejoice and understand the thing. Then while I was sharing, that thing was stuck. It happened many times. That time I was just starting to come out to teach, then my nature can sense. That's why there was so much joy. Sometimes the lightning and all see so loud. Then the thunder, everything. beautiful. You continue.
Brother, I think I will stop for today.
Okay.
I will continue
the next session. Yeah, started.
Good night.